This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable blade knives, fixed blade knives, and game processing kits. Now, we've all been there before, trying to field dress your wild game with a dull knife. This is where Outdoor Edge really steps in. With the Razor Safe system, you can have a brand new razor sharp blade with just the push of a button. No more dull blades and no more problems processing your wild game. To check out all of the products from Outdoor Edge, visit OutdoorEdge.com. And at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% off of your purchase.
This is the Houndsman XP Podcast.
Good dog, get that bird.
The original podcast for the complete Houndsman. The podcast that represents our lifestyle of extreme performance.
Get up there!
Yeah!
Uniting houndsmen across the globe, from east to west, north to south.
You know, if you're going to catch a cat or a lion, you know, you have to have teamwork.
We take you to the wildest places on earth.
Yeah, so how many days a week can you spend out there?
As much as I can, to be honest with you. Anytime that I get, I'm out there.
Join us for every heart-pounding adventure on Houndsman XP.
I'll tell you like I tell everyone else, I'm going to hunt whether you're here or not, so you might as well be here.
Hey, dude, what's up? How's it going?
Hey, Seth. It's going pretty good. I just got home from a field trial.
Oh, really?
How'd that go? Two of my dogs. It went, Piper's doing pretty well. She's in the points race, and She's really putting on the afterburners, and I'm liking what I'm seeing, and she's got enough points now from what I hear that I'll get like some kind of little plaque or something at the WBHA convention. So that's pretty cool.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, so I'm excited. I'm excited for next year.
I have so much I want to talk to you guys about, but I'll keep it for another show. But I hear that sometimes trial people run half greyhound, half treeing hound, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, or like quarter, three quarters, kind of just a mix. I mean, they look like stag hounds, like coyote dogs, just a little bit smaller. And I met someone at a field trial a couple weeks ago that does that. And I was like, what? They tree a coon at the end? What?
Yeah, I know. That's rad. I'd love to see that, honestly. So to the listeners, guys, show me some pictures of those half hot blood, half treeing dogs or crosses. That's cool.
Definitely. Let's see that, because we know not a whole lot about it. But you know what we do know about, what we're here to talk about today, is Chris has tasked us with making this pre-roll, so I suppose we should probably get to that.
I think that's probably a good idea. Good call.
Okay. Well, what's going to happen this week is you guys are going to hear Chris sit down with Carl and Lucas from the WBHA directors. Lucas is the vice president, Carl's the president. You've heard us talk about the WBHA, Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association, before. You've heard about them before. We've posted it all over our sites. You guys, this organization knows what they're doing. Take note. In this, at this convention that happened back in March, just in the auction items alone, they raised over $50,000.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, like super awesome. And then a field trial benefit that we had last week, we raised over $3,000. So, you know, hunters are getting together, houndsmen are getting together, and we're supporting what allows us to continue to do what we're doing. And it's not just bear hunters that should support this. It's the coyote hunters. It's the coon hunters. You know, every hunter should really support it because, you know, we're not just fighting for bear hunting rights. We're fighting for wolf hunting rights and everything that goes in between that that impacts what we do. So I'm really excited for you guys to hear this episode. And stay tuned afterwards. Don't hang up. Don't push pause. Don't, you know, click it off. There's a 10-minute segment afterwards with the lobbyist for the WBHA. So you guys are going to get to hear what that's about.
That's what I was going to say. You beat me right to it.
Oh, sorry.
No, please. You were on a roll. I was happy to just let you go, dude. Yeah. So the WBHA is super well organized and everybody needs to hear about Bob Welch, their lobbyist. This guy is top notch, and this is how really well-organized hound organizations can really take the fight to the highest level. So you guys really should stay tuned and listen to that and get some ideas and learn how to utilize a lobbyist. It's, I mean, as we all know, for better or for worse, that's how politics is done for interest groups. And obviously, guys, we and all outdoorsmen, unity, we are an interest group. So stay tuned for that, guys. I really want everyone to hear that. And man, Lauren, you definitely just totally rolled that pre-roll perfect. So I'm good if you are.
I've got a couple more things to say. So check it out. There's, you know, go to the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association webpage. Look at that. Consider coming to the convention. It's in March of every year. It's really fun. let's be honest. Wisconsin bear hunters, they know how to party. So Chris was leaving for Indiana on Sunday morning at 4:30 in the morning, and he was passing the people that I was still hanging out with, and I didn't get back to my room until after 5 o'clock in the morning. So it's a good time.
Dang. Yeah, man, I should come up next year, huh?
Maybe. I mean, yeah, it's fun. One other thing. Let's talk about that wolf survey.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So you posted that on the Houndsman XP group. You posted that survey that's open to everybody. And I hear you're getting pretty good traction, but I think we could get much better traction. Why don't you explain that a little bit?
Sure. So there's a wolf survey put out for a 10-year management plan for the wolves in Wisconsin for hunting, trapping, et cetera. It's really important to fill it out because the anti-hunters are taking it, you know, is to the highest notch that they can, filling it out, you know, to their regard, and we need to do the same thing. So honestly, you guys, you know, I posted it, a bunch of people have filled it out. I talked about it at the field trials that I go to. I'm on loudspeaker. Yeah. And guess what? I also emailed that survey to like my grandma, my brother, my dad, like people who aren't hunters, but they're on my side, and they filled it out. So if you can get that email out, one of my coworkers even filled it out. So just, you know, it takes a little time. Just send an email, talk to some people, get it as far out as you can.
Definitely. I mean, it's not hard, and it's a great way to get our voice being heard. It's, we need the numbers. It's like a vote. Everybody is adding just a grain of sand to that bucket, and it gets heavier and heavier. And with something right, like wolf hunting, we need to be united and we need to be organized because that's a charismatic animal that draws a lot of powerful emotions from all sides, and our voice is just as important and it needs to be heard.
Right. So guys, get on that. You'll probably hear me talk about it again, and if I have to, I'm gonna email you.
Nice. You've been a beast on social media. I love it, and I really thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, without further ado, let's get into it.
I like it. Thanks, everybody.
Green is rolling. So, you guys got a big day ahead of you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I got Carl Schotel and Lucas Withrow here of the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association on the day of the convention. The doors were open yesterday, and there were a lot of bear hunters coming through here. And but today is the big day. And give us an idea of – today's kind of the culmination. It didn't start last week. When did this project start?
It starts a year in advance. Once it's over, a couple months go by, we have our first board meeting after the convention, and we start planning for the next year. We've already started planning for next year, contracts with the hotel and the convention center. So it is definitely an ongoing process all the time.
Well, I think it's amazing that, you know, there are other states that are having problems getting together, and because of the COVID situation, things like that. And it definitely affected you guys last year with having the convention. But you guys made it happen this year.
Yep. Yeah. We were right on the cusp of the numbers getting better. And there was a lot of nervousness from our members or some of our board members. And the convention center, the hosts, the hotels, you know, they're name brand hotels like Holiday Inn. You didn't know what their policy. So trying to culminate, put that all together and convince people that this is heading in the right direction and the timing will work out. And it did. So that's pretty lucky, I think. So
I mean, there were a few things that you weren't able to do as far as buffet meals, but we can work around that.
Oh yeah.
Because what I see happening here is and I'm gonna see more of it today, but you know, just bear hunters coming out to support each other and support their lifestyle. So Carl, we were talking earlier, what is the goal here? Why do you go to all this trouble to have this convention?
Well, it started way before me, way before Kendall, that we have these meetings. And at first was just a board meeting that members weren't invited to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, their association starts back in the mid-60s, and it just kept evolving before there was any threat to bear hunting. Mm-hmm. It was just to be able to get together, have a board, knew it was important because it still is controversial even in the 70s, and start talking about, you know, you need a membership, you need people who care about the issues to save a sport. So I would say that we were way ahead of the curve from most areas in the country of knowing what's ahead of us.
Right.
And, you know, I always say we got a 20-year start on everybody else, us and the UP Bear Hunters. I mean, they've been in this just as long as we have, and the Lower Michigan Bear Hunters also. And I don't know why it started in the Great Lakes. There was no threat against us in the early days.
Right.
But they soon came 10 years after,
mm-hmm.
and we were all prepared. And of course, we raised a lot of money to fight it.
This region of the country has got such a strong outdoor heritage, whether it be hunting, fishing, whatever. I mean, I remember when I was a kid driving north to Wisconsin, you'd get through Chicago and take a sigh of relief. And as soon as you hit the Wisconsin border, you know, you started seeing billboards about welcome hunters. And, you know, it was just geared towards the outdoor industry. And it's apparent, same way with Michigan. So seems very appropriate that you guys were ahead of the curve. You've been ahead of the curve for a long time. And I know it's from being in the wildlife profession, you know, Wisconsin is a premier state that people try to model wildlife management plans after. And you guys are just cutting edge up here. And so it's no surprise that WBHA is too. Lucas, how long have you been involved in the Wisconsin Bear Hunters?
I've been on the board of the Wisconsin Bear Hunters for, I think, around 10 years now, even though it doesn't seem that long. But I've been the vice president for about half of that at this point. So when I first got into the association, you know, it was just to have a voice and be a representative. And I started working with the membership team when I first got into the association, and grew into, I guess, a leadership position with the Bear Hunters Association. But I still go and, you know, work the membership booth every convention and make mm-hmm. sure that, you know, the part of the face of the organization is there to greet members and answer their questions and, you know, try to get at some of their concerns and make sure that we're doing the things we should be doing.
Yeah, and you've got a great supporting cast here. I've been watching your directors and your members, but mostly your directors. We'll give a shout out to the people that are, you know, make this wheel spin here, as far, or the hub of it anyway, that keeps it rolling. So looks like you've got a great supporting cast. So Carl, you know, you had some clear objectives that you wanted to accomplish with this podcast. And I do too, because I just like talking to you. And I like showcasing premier organizations like this. And if we're going to survive as a hunting culture, a hunting community, then we have got to find ways that are effective to do that. And you've been doing this a long time with the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association. So give us the Wisconsin Bear Hunters keys to success.
Leadership in the organization is paramount, because and transparency. Making sure other hunting organizations, the Wisconsin Bow Hunters, I used to be belong to, and you got a newsletter. In the last 20 years, I would say till today, we had key focus on membership, let them know what we're up about doing, especially legislatively, engage with people to know what this big auction is going to be about. It isn't about just filling the coffers for the organization. This is legislative, 100%. All the monies that are spent here is for making sure that we have access and voices in the state capitol to legislators, and that's the key. Mm-hmm. Without that, we could raise hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years, and we'd just be an organization, but we would have no power in the state capitol.
Mm-hmm.
And learning how to fine-tune this machine, which is what we call the auction. I mean, this is the benchmark of the event. This is it. We have our vendors. We do some little side raffles and everything else, but it's the auction that drives the revenue mm-hmm. to keep bear hunting in the state of Wisconsin. And the thing about the SOS, which is Save Our Sport, being political, a lot of hunting organizations don't want to get involved with it because they hear we're political. We're not political.
How can you not be political? There is no way you cannot be political in when you're talking about saving our sport or saving our lifestyle or saving our, you know, it's all political. Everything is political. You know, the fact that, and I'll just get right down, it's political that you invited me to come to the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association. And it's political that I choose you to be on the Houndsman XP podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, so let's break it down. When you say it's political, you know, give us the most basic definition of that.
You're dealing with people who have control of your sport, and it's the legislature and the Department of Natural Resources.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have access to those two entities. So to build access, you work with the legislature, because the legislature has leverage over the agencies, because that's where they get their money
there
from.
There you go. That's why you got to have those relationships.
Right, right.
Because they pay the bills.
Right, and if things don't, you work with the agencies, and for the most part, there are people who will work with you and want to sit down and listen to you. But does it always go our way? No, of course not. Well, then we feel that if we have a solid argument, and it's based on game management, and what's the best interest of bears in the state mm-hmm. of Wisconsin, and they said they're not listening to us, so then we'll just go to the legislature and say, you know what, let's pass some legislature to get certain things done that improves this condition of what we call bear hunting in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, I think a lot of times the reason people shy away from that word is because we've allowed ourselves it's what politics have turned into. And politics can be very beneficial. And the relationship with those legislators is crucial. I can't think of anything that a state hound organization could be doing that's more important than developing those relationships before they have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, Lucas, you got anything to add there?
You know,
what's your perspective?
The key part of those relationships and politics with legislators is not so much, you know, we talk about access to them, and that access looks like them. It's meeting and greeting them. It's them knowing your name. It's you sitting down with them and letting them know that, you know, you have the best interest of hunting with hounds at heart and what that's about, what that looks like. I've been involved with some workshops, Hunting with Hounds workshop, which I know you've talked about mm-hmm. with some other people on your mm-hmm. podcast. And that is right now solely with the agency, really, in Wisconsin, resource professionals. That's people going into the agencies to work, kids going to college for natural resources, law enforcement, or management. Those relationships have to be in a way that they understand why you do something and why you like to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really mind-blowing, actually. I've been in a couple of those classroom settings in a two-day event where we always ask them at the beginning, you know, what are your What are your preconceived notions about hound hunting? And there's been a couple times when they have been solely opposed to it. You know, right. they only know what they see. You know what I mean? So that's why it's so important to do the work and have the footprint to get in front of these people. And it's not easy to do. It takes time. It takes money. You know, and it takes a lot of dedication to do that. But those are really the important things, you know. And like Carl said, the legislative aspect is huge. You know, you have to have that voice, because if you don't have that voice, you lose.
Right.
And that's just the way the world is now, you know.
And we talk a lot about controlling the narrative. And it's no secret, I think hunters, houndsmen especially across the United States, have lost control of that narrative, and we've allowed other groups to define who we are and what we do. And when I hear and I see, you know, like Wisconsin Bear Hunters and the hound workshops, hunting with hounds workshops that go on here in Wisconsin, that is taking the narrative back. You know, just like you said, I'll just ask you, why did those people have a negative view of hunting with hounds?
It's the perception that someone else gave them. It's something that someone told them how it is, you know what I mean? And they never allowed themselves to make their own judgment call, you know, have their own perception. It's all about what they heard in the office or what they heard at school or what, you know, what their parents told them in some cases, you
know. What they saw in a Disney movie.
Absolutely.
I mean, it has no boundaries.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah,
yeah,
it doesn't. And it seems like everything in today's world is magnified that way. You know, everybody tells everybody else what they're supposed to think. So we really take a strong hand in getting out there and putting in the work, because we know nobody else is going to do it.
Right.
And we're not willing to sit back and watch it unfold. We're going to go out there and put the work in and make sure that people know what we're about. We've always been really good at that, and we'll continue to be good at it.
Absolutely. You know, one thing that most people, it's not because they just don't know. You know, every state fish and wildlife agency has objectives that they have to meet for education purposes in order to even get Pittman Robertson money back into their state. So they have objectives that they have to meet. And so when an organization like yours can step in and say, hey, we can help you with that.
Well, it's even a little more in depth than helping. We'll ask for a review of, like, we got involved with Pittman Robertson, what, Luke, what, 8 years ago?
Yeah.
And we were shocked at what we saw. Coding numbers, requesting, what does this mean? Why is this money going to avian birds, global warming? These are PR dollars. And we kept our foot on the gas and just said, we need to know. These are open records requests. We need to know where this money's being spent. And you got to answer our questions, because, like I said yesterday, you guys work for us. And you got to do that gently, because they'll put up a stone wall in front of you and just shut you out. But they're reasonable requests to find out. And then you ask the hard question. How come bear hunting gets, say, $500,000 a year, and you're studying avian birds, comes in at $750,000, and every hunter and fisherman in the state, with their excise tax that goes into that Pittman Robertson pool, they're not given that tax to work on avian birds. They're the big game species, the deer, everything that everybody thinks about, that's what that money's used for. And then they go, they're watching us. That's a key moment. When they know that you're looking and you're going to keep pushing and you're not going to go away, things change.
Mm-hmm.
And we did get change on how PR dollars were more transparent, so you could see what they are, and moving dollars around to what we thought was important. And we kind of feel like we're the voice for state's hunters, because we're so in-depth involved with seeing data on the state side that we can make judgment calls on behalf of all hunters that is about opportunity. If it means more opportunity, you put it in the deer basket, you put it in the bear basket, the grouse basket. This is what everybody does in this state. They're not into the global warming. And you say, you know what, this isn't fair that these dollars are going here. Why are they there? They're not going to go away, but you can shift how that works and you can have influence. That's how deep you sometimes have to go. Otherwise, you can go to meetings all day and they'll tell you what you want to hear, just like our last wolf meeting that me and Lucas had, and it wasn't going to happen until someone sued somebody.
Right. you know, and they told us, yeah, sure, yeah, whatever. We'll just slow walk it for 2 months and it's expired. Exactly.
Oh, you're actually going to hold us accountable to the law. Wow.
Yeah, you know? How profound, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it takes dedicated people. And the hardest thing to do with all associations is, first, people don't realize how much work it is. They have no clue. Mm-hmm. And then the skill level to talk to people in the legislature, in the Department of Natural Resources, to make sure you're on point and direct and sensitive to everybody's time. And they respect that because they'll give you an hour. I mean, they never let a meeting run long. No. Never. And so you got to make sure you have that drive to get in front of them, say your piece. And if things don't start moving, then we have a lobbyist. We say, Bob, nothing's happening. Set up another meeting. Mm-hmm. So then the second meeting in the agency level is they're not going away. So that's the message you sent. If it doesn't happen then you go, we want another meeting. And they don't want to have meetings with us. Nobody does. They want to run their own show. And then they say, well, what kind of bone can we throw them? And I think that's the process from our lens. And they'll probably tell you it's something different, but it's not adversarial. It's about working together, exposing transparency, and making sure things are going in a direction that they're intended to. And we have a very strong argument with Pittman Robertson that the intent of those dollars are for hook and bullet type activities.
You got it.
And they really don't have a strong argument why not to do it that way. Yeah. They'll try, but they don't.
Oh, yeah. They're good at fluffing and bluffing and, you know, trying to, like you said, throwing you a bone.
Hey, Hound Doggers, if there is one thing that you could identify Houndsman XP with, it has got to be the message of building unity and bridging the gap. That's why we are proud to sponsor with a company like Dogs R Treed. Dogs R Treed is a company that is based in Inkham, Idaho. It's run by Houndsmen. The products were designed by Houndsmen. We're talking decades of experience in the field with some legendary hounds doing some legendary work out there. And Kevin Hall has put his decades of experience into building products that benefit you, the houndsman. So when you're shopping for your gear, check out Dogs R Treed at dogsrtreed.com. And if you go to their website at checkout and enter the code HXP 20% off, you will get 20% off of your entire order on all of their branded products. Leashes, tie-outs, medical kits, paws are protected. Build your pack from the ground up and support a fellow houndsman that supports your lifestyle. Enter the code HXP 20% off at checkout. Go to their website today at dogsrtreed.com.
One thing that you said there, Carl, Wisconsin bear hunters, you guys don't operate in a way that it's just about bear hunters. That's all we care about. All we care about is bear hunters. What I heard you say was you are working on a broad spectrum for all hunting. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, we're the tip of the spear.
Yeah.
Nice.
It'd be a lot easier if we just worried about bear hunting.
Oh, yeah.
But we take up issues from the top to the bottom. Animal care, you know, we advise on gun right bills, you know. I said animal care bills, hunting in general, fishing stuff every once in a while, you know.
How did you get that much influence in your state? Most hound organizations or most houndsmen, I think if you polled them, would say that they are bottom rung influencers.
Well, the dynamic is they need sponsors on their bill, and we have clout. So if sometimes they're Democrats. I wish it was more bipartisan than it currently is, but we just had that the dog bill, and there's nothing really good about the dog bill, about housing and everything else. Oh, it's like why we support it.
Animal welfare bill.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is it's they're regular folks. Their wife's interest is, hey, we should take care of dogs. You know, once you sign up the bill, so you have state representatives, so and so comes up with a bill. And we're like, well, we have your name on it, other people will join. Mm-hmm. You know, they know that we have that kind of clout. And we work with our lobbyists, has a group of interests. Very few of them are hunting. It's ethanol. It's heavy equipment operators. Yeah. And a lot of our members are construction workers. Mm-hmm. They belong to that union. So we have common ground, and if there's something that we can get on board that is common sense, we support it. So then the bill starts having more names on it. Mm-hmm. And that's the key to legislation, is who's all on that bill? That's first thing I ask, when who's asking, who's on the bill? You look and like, nah, we don't want to be with the Humane Society. I don't care what we do.
Exactly.
Even if it made sense, you right. know, we'll run up a different bill. Maybe we'll support it, but we're not going to do that.
Right.
But then you look, oh, they're on the bill. Oh, they're on the bill. The trappers are on the bill. And they go, yeah, we can get behind it. Makes sense. And then at the first draft of the bill, you are able to say, we would be for this, but we're not for this. If you can remove this out of the bill, we'll sign on. And we mm-hmm. just did that. And we do it all the time. And they're usually things that the legislator doesn't have a clue of how it negatively impacts us.
Right, right.
That's how the bills get really good and solid, mm-hmm. and you get pretty much what you want. So it's a process.
And the other big key to having that voice, that lobbyist in your state, you know, for legislature, is identifying those little ones that come up. And you know, bills always start as a conversation between legislators. Hey, I want to do this. What do you think about it? You know what I mean? And then mm-hmm. it's picking up on those and saying, well, yeah, I think that's a good idea, but what if we did it this way? You know, and a lot of times it's, well, what do you think about this? And Bob will consult with us, and we say, absolutely not. And it'll die there. You know, it dies before it ever sees a pen or, you know, or a computer. And that's important, because if every single thought that went through a legislator's head or the legislative process made it to a document for signage, that's all we would do.
Right.
That's it. That's all we would do. It would be nonstop all the time, you know. And we're definitely lucky to be in a position to have them. And I'd like to, I guess, put a shout out to all the past leaders of this organization, because I've never had that opportunity to do that and say thank you, because we definitely would not be where we are today without all of those folks putting the time and money and resources into this organization that we have now. And I mm-hmm. hope that we can continue to live up to, the high moral ground of what we think we believe in and what we think we stand mm-hmm. for, you know. We truly believe that we're doing what our members want us to do, and we always have integrity in what we think we're doing. You
integrity
know?
Always.
You have to.
Leadership, you know, transparency, the things that you guys talked about. So you talked about lobbyists, and I think we need to spend just a second on lobbyists. I think there are a lot of times there's a misunderstanding of and a misunderstanding of what the purpose of a lobbyist is and why it's important to have somebody on board that will do that for you. It's just another one of those things that's been politicized, you know.
Sure.
Lobbyist in Washington, you know, special interest, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So.
Well, a lobbyist, the way we explain to our membership, is they are the key, the doorway to access. And we don't know who to talk to. When you start these things, like, we could go talk to some senator that could give two hoots about what we do, and they wouldn't help you. Mm-hmm. His job is to know the lay of the map, the roadmap in the current legislation and the departments. So they know who are the key people. Any hunting association might know that, but a lobbyist is paid to know that
right.
and stay current. So as things change in every election, and as agencies change and people move through the agencies, he's the guy that's always asking the questions of, who is the guy that if we need to talk about this issue, who is that person today?
Mm-hmm.
Not the guy it was last year. Same with the legislature. And then who are really friendly and have an open door policy to us when we do our Capitol Day. You know, you go there and meet legislators that don't know what this sport is about at all. Mm-hmm. And then we have we interview candidates before after their primaries, before general elections, that are people that are looking for our support, and we would support them. We have a sit down and we grill them. Lucas grills them pretty good yeah. about, you know, are you really just telling us what we want to hear? Are you really believing the things you say? Yeah. And that whole process is really important. And that lobbyist sets all those up. We wouldn't be able to go to a legislator and just knock on his door. Most of them will go, well, you can talk to my staff, leave your notes. With a lobbyist gives you the guy that you need to talk to, not his staff. That's mm-hmm. one big difference. He gets you to the DNR secretary's office, which would be very hard for us to talk to the top guy. and then his agents below him, the top people. Access to the governor. This current governor, we asked for access. It's not been good, but maybe someday we will, because we've met with Scott Walker, which is pretty famous around mm-hmm. the country, what he did for the state of Wisconsin. And before that was Jim Doyle. He was a Democrat. We met with Jim Doyle and went to two fundraisers, he's a Democrat. He signed our captive wildlife bill, which is, I don't know if that would happen today, but back then, by just having that, like Lucas says, if they see you and you talk to them mm-hmm. and they see you're not some troll that lives under the bridge and you're like, wow, these guys aren't that bad, that right. gives you access and then credibility in front of them. And they go, maybe we should listen to them, you know.
And, you know, so much of it is conducting yourself, not just as an organization, but as a leadership of an organization in a way that they know who you are because of what you said and how you brought it to the table mm-hmm. and not in a crazy, and I'm just going to use a bad analogy, but a crazy anti-hunter way. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They always start out with a
emotionally charged,
yeah.
you know, factually unbased. Yeah. I mean, nothing based in fact.
They start out with a good argument and they just kind of, they tip off the deep end, you know, of the emotion. And you have to be emotional, but you have to convey that in a way that's direct, but not irrational. You know what I mean? If that oh, yeah. makes any sense at all. But that makes a big difference, because then when they see you again, they say, you know, yeah, I understand that the Wisconsin bear hunters are passionate about what they do, but I respect them because of the way that they bring it to the table,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's a big deal. I mean, that differentiates you from the everyday organization to the organization that continues to work. We're going to work towards what we need. That mm-hmm. that's, it's just that simple. You know, we currently have three bills right now on the governor's desk that we are told as of yesterday is signing. Those are three bills that we've been working on for 2 years. They were all ready to go before COVID, and COVID came and it all got flushed, and mm-hmm. we actually redid them all. One is to advance our baiting strategies in Wisconsin to allow bottoms of stumps to be affixed to make sure that non-target species have less access to bear baits.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is to fix a law that was changed by the department around buckshot. We didn't feel like they were doing a good enough job in taking their time to get to an answer, so we went to legislative and we got an answer, and it's going to be fixed. It's going to be back in the regs and back legal before we have to wait for somebody else to do it. And the third one was, we have a couple of Wisconsin bear hunters governor's tags every year, two of them, which were limited by how they were given out because of how they were issued. And we've removed that hurdle as well to make sure that we can maximize that funding effort for our WBHA foundation, mm-hmm. which is based around all educational kids, you know, things like that. We donate lots of time and money to kid, you know, events around the state of Wisconsin mm-hmm. and abroad. The Wisconsin Youth Trap Shooting Leagues, we sponsor both of those leagues every year with a check and visit their state tournament. So
right.
And we do the state tournament, that way it gets spread out more. We don't just pick and choose groups. We try to be very broad with it, you know. So and that's also been key to our success, because we're giving back where we think we should be giving back, and mm-hmm. we know that changes the perception of our organization to make sure they understand we're normal people just like everybody else. We go to work every day and we yeah. like to bear hunt,
yeah.
but we know how important it is to continue to fight that fight, and that's what we do.
That's an interesting thing, and I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just trying to be realistic about houndsmen. It just seems like all too often we are reactive to things, and a lot of panic sets in places where they're not prepared. You know, they haven't done the upfront work or the behind the scenes work or the groundwork. They haven't laid the groundwork to be able to react to attacks or things that threaten their lifestyle. And the reason I love having you guys on the podcast is because you guys like are the beacon. You guys show that it can be done. It can be effective. And would you describe the Wisconsin Bear Hunters, obviously, as a proactive organization, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to be. Because like you just described, if not, you're behind the ball.
Oh,
you know?
So by the time we find out, we're already 10 steps behind.
And unfortunately, even being proactive, you're sometimes behind the
ball.
Yeah. You know, but you also, by being proactive, when you do get caught behind the ball, you have that history and that experience to figure out how to get back in front of it. And and that's what's so important, you know, because you don't win when you're caught blindsided and you don't know how to fix it. You can't, you know. So. Mm-hmm.
And you got to control a narrative. You know, we deal with the media and then we don't. The media right now, the way we do it is – You send me, like Luke says, send me your questions, and you'll get a written response, and you can write about it. Yeah. Because 100% of the time, you can do a phone interview, and they will twist it. It's been 20 years that way.
By the time this interview's over, Pete is going to be playing it on a loop on their website.
Yeah. But they're very difficult, and we tell our associations, people want to hear themselves on the radio. It's not worth the headaches you're going to have to cover. Why did you say that? And you're like, I didn't say that. They misinterpreted what my point is again. So the thing is, it's really kind of funny because it exposes their intentions, because what happens when you ask for that, they disappear most of the time.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to twist what you were saying. So be in control of your narrative as an association. That's one simple thing. You think they'll be friendly, and they're the nicest people to you on the radio or on the phone. Oh, yeah, I'm from Los Angeles, or I'm from Minneapolis, blah, 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 and you know what, I'm your best friend, and we're just going to have a cup of coffee and have a conversation, you know. And it's like, nope, that's not what you're up to, because, you know, you look at who their audience is, who's trying to talk to you, mm-hmm. and they're not our audience. So
right.
they're trying to
okay,
disenfranchise
you. So how do you – I mean, our audience – is the smallest segment of the population in the United States. I mean, as far as the hunting community goes, houndsmen, maybe trappers are probably behind us now. But as far as slicing up that pie, that 5-7% of the population that are hunters, and you start slicing that down to houndsmen, it gets real small. Mm-hmm. So knowing that, how do you take an effective message out to that 85% of the population that we really need to be influencing? You know, and when I'm talking about that, we talked about this yesterday. You know, my opinion is we spend too much energy beating the wind with our fists, getting alarmed by or trying to change the opinion of anti-hunters, when 85% of the population who are not going to vote against us is who we need to be influencing. So when you say that, reaching the audience, how do you guys do that?
We don't. We've taken some small steps to start to do that. Like I discussed, we discussed earlier the Hunting with Hounds workshop. The long game of that workshop is to someday potentially bring that to the public, so that people who want to make that choice for themselves or learn a little bit more about hunting with hounds. And that workshop is not, it's not bear based. It's broad. I mean, it's hunting with hounds, from mm-hmm. squirrels to bears to right. wolves to coyotes to bobcats. You know, it's the whole spectrum of it, because it is something much bigger than.
You didn't mention raccoons.
Yeah. Raccoons as well. Yeah. It's everything, really, you know. But the long game there is, you know, like Carl talked about, it's the media. And we do catch a little flack once in a while. Well, why didn't you, you know, why doesn't the Bear Hunters have a position in the paper? Why didn't you comment on a newspaper article? And
do you get that from your membership, or do you get that from
a little bit, you mm-hmm. know, via social media mostly, you know, mm-hmm. they would love to see us, you know,
fight,
stand up and fight. But we know, through history, and we know that, just like Carl said, it's never in our favor 100% of the time. I have yet to see a newspaper writer write an article that they've reached out to us about that shook us in a fair light. They just don't. I mean, and that's why it's so important, like Carl said, you ask them for written, you ask them for written questions and you provide written questions, because then when they produce a product of your twisted words, you're able to hammer that on them and say, this is what I said and why I said it, not what you said I said.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? And yeah. that's so important, but it's such a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because unfortunately, that even that method of telling people something doesn't necessarily work, because that article's always written, it's always even headlined in a predetermined way.
Sure.
I mean, you read the headline, you know what the article's about, right?
Yeah.
Most of the time. You know, yeah. I mean, you just do, and it's just...
Lunatic found hunting bears with hounds.
Yeah.
This is an article about supporting bear hunting.
Right,
sure it is.
Yeah. And yeah. we just think that, you know, as of today, we understand that that may be a deficit in our plan, but we know that there's something more important. You know what I mean? And if we continue to lead by example, we hope that, you know, and we've done a, honestly, I think in the last... 5 to 8 years, our membership has become a much better membership, much better as an organization, in, you know, making sure that they're doing things the way they're supposed to be doing. They're saying the right things. They're not reacting in that negative way, because they finally figured out that all those overreactions
mm-hmm.
have a counter effect. You know
right.
what I mean? You magnify the situation. You know, there's a group here in Wisconsin that's really tried to, you know, shed a lot of light on Wisconsin bear hunters, Wisconsin wolf hunters, and they've just, they throw everything at the wall and they see what sticks.
Right.
And every time someone responds, whether it's in a newspaper article, whether it's on Facebook, whether it's in person, face to face, on a video, and everybody knows what I'm talking about here.
Everything
I'm not,
can be
I'm
taken out of context, twisted
correct.
To fit their narrative.
And if you just don't do those things, you're way better off.
Dakota 283 offers you unparalleled protection for your hounds. We're talking about military grade kennel crates. I got one of these two-door kennel crates here at the house. It is super heavy duty. It's got slap latches on it that are stainless steel, easily fits in the back of an SUV, or if you're traveling with a camper shell, it's a great way to keep your dog protected while you are traveling. You just got to check out their Dash series. This is a watering system, and I've used a lot of these portable waterers over the years, but this system is all integrated into one unit. And the way it's designed, out of high impact plastic, the water stays in the tank when you're not using it, because you can put a plug in it. Check them out. The 3.5 is also compact enough that I can store it behind the seat of my pickup truck while I'm out hunting when it's super cold. I've had exterior tanks before, and as soon as I go to cold climates, then I've got to figure out how I'm going to get water to my hounds. And the Dash takes care of that. So check out Dakota 283 at Dakota283.com, and at checkout, enter the code HXP10 and get 10% off of your order.
You know, Sun Tzu said the supreme art of warfare is to subdue your enemy without fighting.
Absolutely.
And that's what I hear you guys saying.
Yeah.
You know, and houndsmen are really good about, heck yeah, let's get our trucks and we'll go shut down traffic at the state capitol yeah. and we'll all wear our WBHA hats and you know, we're time to fight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there's a better – we're not saying don't fight. We're just saying
– there's a time and place for those things.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
There absolutely is. It's no different than when we go to Madison for a bill hearing. Sometimes the best practice is the best one or two people that you can put there to talk intelligently and responsibly,
mm-hmm.
right? But
mm-hmm.
there are times when you need 100 people to show up at the Capitol and say, you know, we're going to bang our fist a little bit here on the table because we really think this is important to us,
yep.
and we want you to listen. So
it's
a different strategy.
In your process here, getting back to the administrative code side, do you have to have public hearings for rules and stuff, proposed rules, where they take public comment and different things like that?
Yes, they do.
Yeah,
yep.
So – I mean, that's a perfect time to fill the hall with
yep.
people. We lost a bobcat bill in Indiana. The opportunity to hunt bobcat 2 years ago because our hunters were asleep at the switch.
Yeah.
The other side came out and opposed it, And we thought it was a slam dunk, and we just kind of rested on our laurels.
Mm-hmm. And that's so, probably the hardest mechanism is getting people to get involved, mm-hmm. even members, you know. And unfortunately, you know, Kyle's been at this a long time, and I've been at it for a while, and you start to realize that you can't possibly cover every door. I mean, I'm talking, you need to be right into your township, you know, meetings, because that your neighbor next door, you don't know that he's going to the township board and saying he doesn't like your dogs barking and he right. wants a dog barking ordinance, which isn't hunting related, but it is hunting related.
Yep.
You know what I mean? He doesn't like you. I've personally experienced that. He doesn't like you because he doesn't like what you do, because he doesn't understand it. And he thinks that his way is better than yours, you know, and that's at a very small level, but then that gets magnified. So you have to be involved in these things so you catch them when they're going on and not when they're done, you know. But getting membership to show up, we've had some good success here in Wisconsin. We have what's the Wisconsin Conservation Congress, which is the residents' outlet to go and put things on the table for the state to look at. And we've had very good success with our members showing up at those meetings and voicing their opinion and help keep things, you know, the way that we would like to see them mm-hmm. go. So.
Yeah, when Luke took the bull by the horns with membership, I started looking at the association as the president is what, you know, you got to acknowledge is where you're weak and or stagnant. Stagnant mm-hmm. is status quo.
Right.
And you got to identify those areas. So that was one of the areas. We always had a membership that was kind of just floating.
Mm-hmm.
And with Luke's leadership, we put a lot of focus, a lot of resources on it. It wasn't a one-person responsibility. It is a seven-person responsibility.
Right.
And your membership is key. And what we do at our association, we have questionnaires that go out to the full membership. What should we be working on? And we know what we can get done legislatively or through the agency, and we put them out there, and then they grade them. And I would say we get pretty much 80% of them done. So our membership looks at, hey, I filled out that thing. 2 years later, it's done. So stump bills is going to be a prime example. Yeah. And that's what they wanted.
Wow.
You know, training during hunt season.
When you can give ownership back to the
– Yep.
When you give that ownership back to the membership, you know, you make them feel a part of it, then you are so effective. You know, that's one of the basic – I mean, it's a key to leadership. You know, when the people – walk about and they see that the work is all done, they say, I did it myself, you know,
mm-hmm.
key when they can look at that. And, yeah. and it's important for leaders to allow membership to have that ownership too.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I've been involved in several organizations where, the board of directors thinks it's all on them. It's all my, clingy and possessive of their position and fail to stop and find ways to get membership involvement because they don't want to lose that control. That's not leadership. That's dictatorship.
Yeah, and we have that problem in our state too at other organizations. It's like you don't want to have a big tent because then you got to allow more input from other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always like, what's wrong with that, you know? You need to hear from everybody what you want to hear and what you don't want to hear.
Right.
And then through that, you navigate and make decisions. So
yeah,
that's what we're really good at. In membership, we put focus on it. We grew our membership. They're more involved. There's ownership in membership, and it's become the core focus of the organization. This stuff here, we can do it in our sleep. We've been doing it so long.
Right.
So it's work at 2 days of the year, and everybody knows their role. And it's just a matter of not a lot of babysitting here at all. We have great board members that know exactly what to do.
Yeah.
And then the network of the hound community in Wisconsin, as far as all those items and the pups that come through here, the vendors, they all know this is where it's at, and they want to help because we're effective. And that's why we're effective, is because of the way we structure this organization. So like Lucas said, the past presidents going back 30, 35 years, 40 years, I mean, it's a slow crawl to the top, but we're at the top. We're at the pinnacle of what an association should be in the United States.
So you said something earlier. You said this is not one of the things that you do. This is the thing that you do for fundraising, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
but we expanded that. Then we went to town halls because yeah. not everybody can come to this. And I was kind of – I needed some convincing that the town halls – are we going to get people want to work some more, you know? Mm-hmm. But we combine them with our board meeting. We're already there. And there are a lot of people who just can't make this event at this date. So we started town halls. And, of course, because of COVID, we canceled all of them, right?
Yeah.
And it turned out those were really great because they're a lot smaller.
Yeah, it's a different setting.
Different setting.
It allows – what it really allows, and the big reason that I – supported it so much, and we actually have a bunch of our board members from the Northwest District that have been doing this for a really long time, having their own like fundraising Wisconsin Bear Hunters mechanism and then giving back to the organization. So we mirrored it after what they did, and we now host one in the four quadrants of the state once a year. But it's a way for us to get in front of our members at a very personal level. I mean, these are meetings with, you know, 100 or less, you know, members, but it allows them to ask questions that they want to ask and get information that they want to get. And it allows us to give better, more direct information back to them. You know, we do invite legislators to those meetings typically as well. Mm-hmm. And that helps them put their face in front of people. You know what I mean? For all different kinds of reasons. Obviously, our focus is mainly around, you know, hunting and opportunity, but it's been a very, very critical step in getting our members to go, wow, these guys, you know, they are listening to us. We do care. This would not be an organization without them. I mean, no matter what, this particular event, like Carl said, started as, it's even written in our bylaws that this is the members' event where you can change your bylaws, where you nominate to elect new officials to the board. You know, that's what this event is. That will all take place today, but it's busy.
Yeah.
You know, there's, you know, potentially thousands of people here in 2 days, and it's very chaotic.
Right.
So it's hard to get in front of them and talk to them, you know, because it's busy. So we felt it was important to do that, and it's been great. You know, it's been very successful, and we have used some fundraising tactics, obviously, in those as well, and it has helped fill in the gaps for us. So
I know you guys are going to be – you guys got a whole busy day ahead of you, and this is going to be the easiest thing that you do all day. I've just got a couple more questions, and then we'll wrap it up. But what do you expect – what is your goal for fundraising today on this event? Well, let's just
mean in a dollar amount, or
the dollar amount, give people some hope that this
let's say anywhere between $20,000 and $50,000.
$20,000 to $50,000. That's
we never hit the high number, and we haven't hit the low number in years, so
Yeah.
I don't want to be too specific. So,
right. Yeah. I get it. We'll give a bracket. But, I mean, for most organizations to think that they could raise that kind of money, even at the low end, seems that it can be unattainable or out of reach for them. And if somebody wanted to really get down to brass tacks, really move, either form an organization in their state or move their organization forward, could they come to either one of you to talk to you about
absolutely
how they can
absolutely
affected?
Yeah, absolutely.
We do it all the time.
That's probably one of our biggest undefined responsibilities that we have as leaders, is to make sure that if anyone brings something, you know, to the table and has questions about that, is we can certainly, you know, tell them what we've done and how we've done it, and help them down that road. But it takes work. I mean, they have to have a serious initiative to do that. You know, and I just had a phone call this last week from a guy who wants to start a coyote hunters organization because of the coyote hunting contest bans and legislation going around the country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very, very serious commitment, you know, but it's totally doable. You just have to surround yourself with the right people, and we've been fortunate to do that. You know, we've had board members here all morning since 7 o'clock working to get set up for the day, you know. So.
Right. Embrace your young board members, because they have technology advantages over me. I'm becoming the old guy. And, you know, it's like I try, but you got to listen to the young people on your board, and you have to get young people on your boards. Boards tend to be the old farts club, you know, and small boards in different parts
of
the state.
That's a good point.
And that is the worst thing. And, you know, it goes back to what you say. That's that control thing. And you got to get the young people involved, and you got to get women and ladies involved. It's paramount to your success.
And, I agree.
And everybody assumes they don't have your passion. To be frank, they're full of crap. They have your passion. It's just different from yours.
Yeah.
And you got to recognize it, and you get them engaged, and they will work for you, and they'll be smart about things, and make mistakes. But
do you have an Instagram account, Carl?
No.
Have you ever sent a Snapchat?
No.
Have you ever seen TikTok?
No.
There you go. And I don't bring that up to embarrass you. I bring it up because those are the things. Younger people are looking at those types of platforms, and us old guys are like, what is that? Why would we do that?
That's Luke's job. He takes care of Facebook.
You know?
And make sure he polices it. I mean, so it's not a complaining site.
Yeah.
It's about positive.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's where communication starts, and there's so many things out there that as we grow older, we think, why the hell would anybody get on TikTok? And then your son starts showing you all kinds of stuff when you're thinking, well, maybe, you know, I'm not going to do it, but I need to find somebody that can have a voice there.
And that's the key.
Yeah.
That's the key, is finding those right people that you can massage to understand the consequences and the benefits of those things. We went through a huge, oh my God, I don't even know how many board meetings we talked about Facebook, our own personal.
Wears me out.
It was terrible, but we did it. We finally convinced everybody that it was a good thing. We rolled it out, and it's been a very, very effective membership tool for us. We use it as a tool. It's not an interactive page in the sense that we allow postings for things for sale. It's strictly informational, but it's so, so positive.
Again, it goes back to that concept that as much as we don't like it, there's going to be somebody in those platforms talking.
Yeah.
So they can either be talking for us or they can be talking against us. But if we don't talk for ourselves, somebody else is going to control the narrative and define who we are and what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to find those people that are familiar and can be effective there.
And the game's always changing when it comes to technology. It changes fast.
Yeah.
We're definitely behind the ball in the technology aspect, but we've acknowledged that we know we can do better, and we'll go from there. So,
yeah. Well, I know you guys are busy. I've said that, but before I let you go here and wrap this up, I'm going to let you off the hook. I asked you a pretty pointed question about how you're reaching that biggest portion of the population, and I thought it was going to be a softball. Carl, I thought it was going to be one of those softball questions because you have already told me that you guys recognize landowners.
Mm-hmm.
One of the key things that your members can do is recognize landowners and give them awards.
Mm-hmm.
And anything else like that. I know you're working with ag you know, if you're
– Yeah,
if
Farm Bureau.
Yeah. WBHA, if you guys are swinging a big stick, you're working with those other people that have influence on that population.
And the key there is working with them. Not above them, not below them, not against them, with them. Mm-hmm. We all have different perceptions of what we think is right, wrong, and otherwise. But, you know, like Carl explained to you earlier, it's taking the overall view of a new bill or a direction and removing critical parts that you can't live with, you know, or you don't want in there, and you work together. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I need to tell you that's probably the biggest downfall of our society today. I mean, watch the news. It's
right.
It's ridiculous.
It's tribal.
You know,
And we talk about that a lot.
Yep.
And we're tribal within our own community of houndsmen.
Yeah.
And
right.
We've got when it comes to issues like this, I mean, today WBHA, there's no place for tribalism. The only tribe is WBHA today. It doesn't matter what camp you're in or what hunting group you're in or what color the dog is you're turning loose or what truck you want to drive. You know,
WBHA. Let's not get excited there.
Okay, I went overboard.
Yeah. Well, I would say our biggest weakness, I think, moving forward, what we got to work on is working with other groups. We got to improve on that. We're the big stick, but we need to find more common ground with the bow hunters, and hopefully they'll take our model and go, it works, you know.
Yeah. Right.
we got to expand the army of hunters, and it can't just be hound hunters in the state.
I agree. There's so many other groups that, you know, you just hope every year, you know, there's so many more out there, and you just don't hear a lot from them or see them a lot. But we hope they're watching and or they're listening and they're paying attention, that they can be a voice too, you know, and we can all work together to make sure we have common ground, you know. I've worked on a bunch of committees with the department on public land access and how we calendarize public land use and where things are appropriate, all the way from skiing to biking to hiking to dog hunting to bird dog training facilities and all of that stuff. And it's a very interesting dynamic when you put all those people in the room who are very passionate about something, and you start to look at a specific landscape and how it can be used to maximize its effectiveness for everybody. And that's a really important thing, you know, to work together with those people and say, well, you know, obviously there's ways to divide that. Season dates, calendar dates, you know, snow, there's wet, you know, I mean, there's all different kinds of dynamics, but it's so important. That's your chance to really make people understand what you like to do and why you like to do it, but it's also your chance to work with them and not against them. You know what I mean? And say, well, you don't need to be there when I'm there, instead of saying, well, I don't care if you're there, as long as you don't care if I'm there, you know? And it's so critical. And unfortunately that doesn't happen a lot. Right. It doesn't seem like it happens a lot in today's world, you know? So we will always continue to work harder at that. And we always acknowledge that we can work. We're always willing to work with anybody.
Yeah,
you know, whether we have common ground or we don't have common ground, we can still agree to disagree. That's part of a life choice. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be animosity. You can just agree to not agree and move forward. That's right. How it's supposed to work, you know. So
I wanted to touch on one aspect about a bill. We just got a bill about increasing enforcement from 3 to 5 people to check on puppy mills. Because puppy mills are bad. Real puppy mills are bad. We all agree to that, right? And, of course, our red flags go up because it's about dogs.
Right.
And my first questions always are, who are they hiring? What are the requirements? What the criteria of the people who are these hires? We can say that sounds good, and they'll hire someone from PETA or has affiliations and supports those, actively writes membership checks to them. Mm-hmm. That isn't what we want. If we have people who are reasonable and have a good background and get involved with that decision part of it, is who are these people that are in these agencies is really key. And if you can get your toe in the door and you got some, because most people don't ask questions like that on legislation. It's either, yeah, I'm for it, I'm not, or, you know, line 2, you should remove it. But we're going to like, okay, you're creating more enforcement. Who are these people?
Right.
We want to know. You want our support. We want to know who are the people that are going to be out in the field harassing people or doing the right thing about how they're taking care of dogs, and they're being, don't use their inbuilt biases of what they think it should be like and not doing their job. And that's rampant in our agencies and in our culture, that this infiltration of the people sitting across the table from you aren't necessarily who you think they are. And right. You got to really ask the right questions to make sure that if you're going to support something, it isn't just about the bill. It's also about the people who are going to be active behind that bill, or the enforcement part, or the delegators, or the people who are implementing. Those people are really key, because they'll build in those biases on those bills just by who they're having running that type of department. So
right.
It's real important.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on anything, Lucas?
No. Really appreciate you making the trip here. I know we were pretty adamant about you being here, and
it's all right, man. I'm glad to be here.
Like to work with, you know, the core of the people that are good at what they do. And Chris, I think you have I've watched you as you've grown through, you know, Houndsman XP, and it is definitely becoming a voice for us.
Yeah, good.
And us, as I say that, as a houndsman, you know what I mean. And this is the technology that's important for people to understand what we do, why we do it, you know what I mean, and that we're willing to work hard at it. But so I appreciate you making the trip and being here, and I hope you have a good time. So.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's been
Luke, he actually hunts too, because I hunted with him in West Virginia. So
I try.
He tries. So
it's hard when you're out there trying to do the best you can for the sport that you love. It's hard to divulge that time back into. I say it all the time out of my dog kennel in front of my 10 dogs, and I'm like, spend a lot of time working for you, but not with you sometimes, you know. Yeah. But you got to have that dissection of doing what you love to do as well.
So and I really do. I mean, working with groups like the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association is what keeps my wheels turning. You know, I've always felt very loyal. Maybe, you know, my whole adult life has been about public service, you know, between law enforcement, my military, and now with Houndsman XP, you know, it is something that is so important. And if somebody doesn't tell the story, who's going to tell it? Southern Hound Hunting Magazine is the most comprehensive magazine that represents your lifestyle as a houndsman. If you can hunt it with a hound, it is being covered in the pages of Southern Hound Hunting Magazine. You also get an in-depth look at the men and women who are engaged in this lifestyle, living it every day to the fullest. From the Rocky Mountains to the Southern Swamps and across the ocean, with articles about our international houndsmen and what they're chasing across the pond. Go to southernhoundhunting.com, get your subscription for $15 a year. Southern Hound Hunting Magazine, promoting the fair chase experience.
Yeah, right. So absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So it really is what I feel. And we get some blowback. You know, we get some blowback. Let's talk about Old Blue going up the – well, we want to make sure we can turn Old Blue up the holler, you know, and listen to that race.
Yeah. And that's what I meant by balance. It's so hard, you know. You have to – you can't lose sight of what you love to do. You just have to find that balance and how you continue to fight for it and how you continue to do it as well. But you're absolutely right. That's the part that people have to understand, is that there's so many people out there that say there's all different levels of commitment, and that comes – that is right down to a $35 membership to the WBHA, which helps its other members and leadership do what they need to do to make – to protect it, right? That's still support. That's still commitment, you know, and it's so important. You know, you get that thing in your mailbox and you go, ah – you know, I forgot about it or whatever, and it's frustrating to see that, because we know how it's very important for Carl or I or Bob to go to the table with people who matter, for lack of a better term, you know, the people who are responsible for making decisions for us in the field, and say, I'm here speaking on behalf of 3,000 members. Mm-hmm. That's powerful.
Yeah.
But when you don't have that commitment for that $35 a month membership, it's not recorded as a person who supports you, you fail there.
Right.
You know, and it's so important. It's so much more. That $35 doesn't do nothing. You know what I mean? It cuts the nuts and bolts of a couple publications a year, a subscription to a magazine, and puts – but that number, that clout that number has, is really, really important.
Intrinsic value.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily monetary value, but is valuable. Absolutely. Intrinsic
I always
value.
Say to the guys, because this is a Busch Light country, you know, so it's two cases – 230 packs of Busch Light. Yeah. Come on. It works.
I know. That's all you can find around here. Yeah. Busch Light everywhere I go.
Yeah. But it is. Yeah. I mean, people go – yeah, I get that. That makes sense. That's
I've,
all
I've
is.
Tried to, you know, make those rational comparisons to, you know, draw those analogies together. And people make time for what's important to them. And I think every organization, people just need to look at it. Contribute what you can contribute.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, if everybody would just contribute what they could, for one, they'd find out that they've got more time and energy to contribute than what they realize, but then they'd also reap the benefits. So,
and you know, I feel for the most part, the people who fill these seats here will die on the sword for us.
Absolutely,
I'm dead serious.
That is a powerful message.
Yep, and they know it, and they know we'll die on the sword for them.
How many chairs you got set up?
About almost 1,200.
1,200 chairs, and 1,200. Members of the WBHA Army are going to fill this hall, and That's cool.
One awesome. Thing I'd like to close with, because we really didn't answer your 85%. We feel that, not that they don't matter, that it doesn't accomplish much. So we have more laser focus with the people who can make change happen, mm-hmm. and focus on our membership, because that's what you can do.
Yeah.
Years ago, we were going to do a $50,000 video production. We made a video production, spent all this money, had VCR tapes. Go to shows, people looked at it. We threw most of them away, spent a lot of money. And you know what? What we do, people don't really care. They just don't. We care.
Yeah.
Right. To me, it's the message of conservation and how important it is.
Right. Yeah.
And science, right. And agencies. Working together to manage animals, because if we don't manage them, they're going to pay people to manage them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line.
Seeing it all over the West, you yep. know.
And when California. It's dollars, it won't necessarily be about the betterment of management. It'll be about the cheapest way or the most effective way to manage that population,
yep.
which is not – it's not right. You know what I mean? It's not mm-hmm. the correct way to do that. So we've always mm-hmm. took a pretty hard line in every meeting we've ever had since I've been in the leadership position here about, you show me why we should do something different and we'll talk about it. Otherwise, this is the best management plan moving forward. And that works. But when you're presented with facts and data, you have a responsibility to that management to take a hard look at that and make a decision then. And that's what we do. And going back to what Carl just said, we don't do that broad public thing because it is less effective, but we always talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I think there will come a time, you know, we've given we did a tornado relief fund check to the
Shittek.
Yeah, for $5,000 from
right.
our organization.
No, and 11,000.
Yeah, yeah. So and we've done a lot of those things, but are they effective? Yeah, but they're effective to the people that know and appreciate what we do, which is okay with us. You know, there will come a time and place when I think there'll be an opportunity for us to do more in the public eye and have a better chance to explain why we do things and how we want people to see us, you know. But we also know that people that are capable of making reasonable decisions in their own mind, that if they see the facts and the data, I mean, no different than the just this past wolf hunt, you know, how you see all these headlines about over quota. Mm-hmm. Look at the data.
Yeah.
It's not an over quota situation. It's just the way that you look at the data.
Right.
You know, so it's a perfect example. And that's what's important. The people that you know are important to look at you in a certain way, those are the ones you want to make sure that you talk to.
Yeah, it's a matter of priority. And I agree 100%. Those 85 people don't care what we do. We just got to make sure that they don't vote against us.
Right.
Yep.
And so you prioritize that. You know, how do we keep them from voting against us? That's not necessarily your priority. You know, you want to spend your money on your membership yeah. and influence in places that give you real influence. You just don't need that 85%.
Well, that's the importance of your lobbyists, like the operators. Not all the operators bear hunt. Not all even fish.
Right.
But they'll support us.
Yeah.
So that's that networking through your lobbyists with non-hunting groups and hunting groups that don't have the same interests. And then slowly inching it out, you know,
yeah.
maintaining.
Yeah.
That's the most effective way that we know of.
Yeah.
If there's a more effective way, we'll look at it. But right now, that's where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did we miss anything?
No, I think so. We covered it all.
All right. One thing, if somebody wants to reach out to you and find out about Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association, Lucas, tell us how they can do that.
Yeah, you can look at us. The easiest way is going to be on our website, wbha.com.
.usa.com.
.us, yeah, usa.com. That's going to be the easiest way to look us up.
Yep, give us that again.
wbha.us.com. Yep.
Yep. Yep. I can tell you that if you just go in a search engine and type in Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association, it'll pull you up.
Yep. So that's the best way. There's tools on there to get in contact with any of us. So.
Yeah. News, events coming up, everything is right on your website.
That is correct.
How to get a membership.
Yep.
You know, everything's there. So, guys, I appreciate your time. I know you're going to be busy today, and I appreciate your hospitality of inviting me up and allowing me to participate in this event, this historic event.
Yeah.
And if you haven't got anything else, let's go get after it.
Sounds good. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks,
you follow your hounds, yeah. I'll follow mine.
That sounds right.
Well, normally that would be a wrap, everyone, but not this time. In this special episode, Chris keeps following his hounds. He has Bob Welch on the line. Bob is the lobbyist for the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association, and this is the kind of audio that everyone needs to pay attention to. This is how you take your hound hunting organization to the next level. So sit back, everyone, and listen to what Bob and Chris have to say. Take notes. Absorb this material. This is good stuff, guys, and we're really excited to bring it to you. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We appreciate you all.
I'm with Bob Welch, who is a lobbyist in the state of Wisconsin, who represents the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association. I appreciate your time, Bob.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Yeah. So I just want to spend a few minutes with you, 10 minutes or so here, and just tell our audience what a lobbyist does and sure. how you represent the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association.
So lobbying 101, I'll give you the 2-minute version. If you want to affect policy in this country, you should do what our founding fathers talked about. You know, you need to be involved. That's the way our government works. People who are not lobbying the government are just waiting for something to happen and aren't influencing it at all. Mm-hmm. And that's not what our founding fathers wanted. This government works when you get involved. And the Wisconsin Bear Hunters are very involved. They have a hugely active membership. And when you think about lobbying, there's the message, there's the messenger, and then there's the resources you put behind it. Mm-hmm. And for the message, you know, we have to be very clear about what we do. You know, why hunting with hounds is a great thing, why we help with managing wildlife, why it's a sport that's fun, you know, all that right. stuff, and the kids and all the things that go along with it, which a lot of other hunting groups don't have. You know, we have the kids involved right from the get-go, which is great. And so that message is, we have a great message to sell, but we also have a lot of people don't like it. So we need to be involved, because if we don't talk, they will. And there's two ways to talk. One is you know, the people, the grassroots, the hunters. Mm-hmm. You are part of the message. You know, how you behave, how you act in the woods, how you treat your neighbors, how you treat the landowners. That's all part of the message. And if that goes bad, then there's nothing I can do.
Right.
So that's important. Don't give up on that. If you're doing that now, if you're not doing it, you should. Mm-hmm. But then the second part of the messenger is not you, it's me. It's the lobbyist. And why is that important? Because you can't be in the Capitol, in our case, state capital in Madison, Wisconsin. You can't be there every day.
Right.
I'm there every day. Mm-hmm. That's what I do for a living. I spent 20 years in the legislature. Then for the last 15 years, I've been in the lobbying business. Wisconsin Bear Hunters were one of my first clients when I left the
really?
Legislature. Yep. Yep. Within 6 months of me leaving the legislature, I was working for the Bear Hunters. So they're in my heart. You know,
right.
they're a group I really care about. And I was a strong supporter of hunting and bear hunting when I was in the legislature, so it was a really good fit. I'm a hunter myself, but I'm not a bear hunter. I'm not a houndsman.
Right.
So, you know, I'm related, but I'm not that related. And your lobbyist doesn't have to be an active hunter even. It's just somebody who can represent you well. And so what I do is spend every day in the Capitol talking to legislators, talking to other groups that are involved in hunting, mm-hmm. Working to make sure our message is heard in the inside. You
right.
know, there's the outside game where you're talking to the public. You're also contacting your legislator. You're coming down for one day a year to talk to them. You're calling them up if you got a problem. You should do all that. But you're not going to be there every day. You're just not.
Right.
And so that's where I come in, to help guide you and show you how to handle the ropes in the Capitol.
And not only that, you come to the convention and pass out flyers and,
yes, I
and
do
things
that
like that. So, yeah. You're invested here.
Yeah, I'm full
so,
throttle. Absolutely.
So who develops – okay, so you are the boots on the ground in the Capitol for mm-hmm. your organization, for the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association. So tell us what that job looks like. Are you the person that develops a message? Are you the person that advises on the message? Are you merely a recon scout that's telling everybody what's going on? Or do you do all of it?
All that.
Okay.
All that. Yeah. So we have a board of directors. The board of directors sets policy. But it's my job to sort of tell them what's going on in the Capitol. Here's some things that we need to react to,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're not going to know that necessarily right away. I'll find out right away what's going on
yeah.
and let you know, hey, this is what's happening. We should oppose that. We should support that. But then you're hearing back from your members as a board of directors, here's the problems we're having. Bob, can you fix that? And then it's my job to develop a plan to fix.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, we just had 3 bills signed by the governor yesterday.
Nice.
3 bills that we got through from January to now, which is quick in legislative mm-hmm. time. to fix problems that we that our members brought to us. These are things we needed to fix. And we got that through the legislature, both houses, unanimously. Mm-hmm. Now, that happens because the bear hunters have been around a long time and people are used to them and they're used to hearing from me about them. They're used to, you know, we bring, you know, real people, board members in to testify on these bills. And we have credibility.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of friends. And we make those friends in a variety of ways. One is educating them about bear hunters. But another is just, I just go to a lot of, like, fundraisers for legislators and show up there with a check from the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association Conduit Fund. And so they know that I'm their friend.
Right.
Not just a guy talking to them. I'm their friend. So. Mm-hmm.
And when we use that word friend in politics, define that.
So,
are you shooting golf with them? You going to their kids' birthday parties? You know, what does that really mean?
Not the kids' birthday party so much, but I do play golf with them. Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
There's a few guys that are like really my friends, but when politics friends means someone you agree with, you hang out with a little bit, you confide in, you talk about what's going on, and you
people
know,
that you can trust,
have an adult beverage once in a while. You know, people that are you can trust. And one thing that people think about politics is it's dirty. You know, there's something wrong with it. So, man, I don't want to write a check out to a politician because that's awful. Again, founding fathers wanted you to do that. And it's not dirty. Here's why. There may be a guy who hates hunting. You give him a $500 check, he's not going to change his mind. Mm-hmm. So you're not out there, like, bribing people to change their mind. That doesn't happen in politics, at least not in Wisconsin, at least not much, not that I know of. So what you are doing is getting people who are your friends already, they're already strong hunting supporters, and making sure they get reelected.
Exactly.
Because you want them there.
Yes.
And you want them to move up the ladder so they become the chairman and all that kind of stuff. And then there's a whole other group that just don't know anything about hunting. And so, yes, you're educating them, but if you're educating them and also helping them a little bit, yeah, they listen a little better, maybe.
Right.
And they're there to either become your really good friend or at least not to be your enemy. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, at least they're not going to vote against you.
Right, yeah. Right. So we have a lot of friends, quote unquote, that, you know, aren't going to really lift a finger to help us much, but mm-hmm. they're going to stay out of our way, and that's just as good sometimes.
How important is it for organizations to start developing a plan like the Wisconsin Bear Hunters has and become proactive? Is it better to be better to be proactive or reactive in politics?
Well, always better to be proactive.
There you go.
You can be a policy maker or a policy taker. And if you're a policy taker, you're reading about it in the paper in the morning and it's already done. And when that hearing comes up, half the work is done before that.
That's an important thing. I'm glad you brought that up. You know, it seems like a lot of times we hear things, there's always this call to action that comes out on social media. By the time that comes up, how far down the pipeline is that thing?
Somewhere between 25% and 80% already done by the time you hear that. Now, sometimes you have a really good chance to influence it, and sometimes it's done. The cake's baked. It's done.
Yeah.
You know, so by the time you get that alert, it's all done. That's my job, let you know what's going on before we get to that point.
That's valuable.
Yeah.
What other words of encouragement would you –
So the big thing that the Wisconsin Bear Hunters realized when they were, you know, they lost their season back in the early 80s, and they realized, man, if we don't get organized, we're going to not have a sport. And that was before my time.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, they realized that, well, to get organized means we got to raise some money. So this organization puts a lot of effort into raising money, so they have resources. They have people power, too. But, you know, you'll see today, it's an amazing operation and what these guys put together and how they raise money in many different ways and use that money, part of it to hire me,
mm-hmm.
Part of it to keep an active organization running, and then part of it it goes into our fund where we help politicians that are on our side.
Yeah. Okay, so stepping outside of Wisconsin, say there's somebody in Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, Australia, South Africa, you know, obviously we can't talk about their political systems, but okay. So in the United States, an organization says, hey, I liked what Bob had to say. How should an organization, where do they find a lobbyist that can be effective for them?
Yeah. So actually we can help, you know, I have friends and contacts in all 50 states, more mm-hmm. or less. So they can contact us and we can help. But the real bottom line is, somebody needs to do the homework on who in the Capitol, who in the lobbying world would be a good person to represent us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who would that person be? When I started with the Bear Hunters, I didn't have any other sporting groups. I have a few other ones now. So, but sometimes you can find someone who has other sporting groups, you know, whether it's, you know, bird hunters or deer hunters or whatever. Maybe they have a lobbyist. Most groups don't, quite frankly.
Right.
So you're going to be probably in virgin turf, you know, just looking for somebody mm-hmm. who would be good for you. So
talk to us about, I'm curious about the Wisconsin Bear Hunters takes a very specific route, and Carl's talked to me about this several times, but I'm a retired wildlife professional. I worked for DNR in Indiana. Mm-hmm. And I carried the message for a lot of years that we should follow the rule proposal, the administrative rules proposal process, because the professionals are the ones who need to make policy with hunting and fishing. And Wisconsin, from what I'm gathering, takes a little bit different approach.
We do. Not that we don't work that process, not that we don't work with the professionals, not that we don't try to make friends with all those mm-hmm. guys in the administration, but administrations change, the people at the top change. Not everyone at our Department of Natural Resources pro-hunting, I'm sad to say.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're not maybe anti-hunting, but they're not necessarily pro-hunting. Mm-hmm. But some are, and we work with those very well. Because of COVID, they won't be here today, but in a lot of years, we have people from the DNR here at our meeting. So we work hard to develop that relationship. But we know we can't, in the end, rely on just that.
Right.
Because the DNR starts down the wrong path, we can call our friends in the legislature and get it fixed. And sometimes it's quicker to get a bill passed than to get a rule changed, quite frankly.
I agree with that. I've seen that.
Yeah. And the other problem we have in our, and this is something, you know, bigger than you and I, Chris, but not all hunters get along all the time.
Right.
So we, you know, inside the DNR once in a while, not always, mm-hmm. we end up having to not fight, but we have to convince other hunting groups that it's okay what we're trying to do.
Right.
And, you know, with the legislature, we can just say, hey, this is what we need. Bear hunters need it. Let's see if we can get it done.
Right. Well, Bob, did I miss anything? Any other important messages when you encourage organizations to get
lobbyists? Yeah, this is, if you want to see your sport 40, 50 years from now, you got to do it. You just got to. The pressures, you all know it. The pressures are out there against us.
Right.
Especially houndsmen, especially bow hunters, especially trappers. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think they're going after, at least in Wisconsin, the mainstream deer hunters for quite a while, but they'll try to pick us off on the edges, as they would call it.
Sure.
And that's us. We're in the crosshairs.
Yep. Well, Bob, I appreciate your time. Thanks for spending a few minutes
Absolutely.
With us. And, absolutely. And thanks for all your hard work.
It's fun. It's a great group, as you'll find out this weekend. Yep. And it's a great group, and they're doing good work, you know. And in the end, it's not just about hunting. It's about freedom. This is about freedom.
Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association is a premier hound organization, and that's why I found it very worth my time to come up and participate, become a member, and it's a model for other organizations to follow. So we like talking about success.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Bob, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right.